And so now we're going at it. So, you know, we're both naked and I'm starting to, you know, I go for his penis and I'm, you know, on the penis and, you know, you're going for the balls. And I'm like, where are the balls? Now in my head, I'm like, where are the balls? I know it's been a little bit, but did they move the balls and I didn't get the memo? Where are the balls? So I go back to the penis because I know that. I'm like, okay, so we do whatever. And he he ends up spending the night. The next morning we're lying in bed talking. And he says, oh, did you notice something different about me? I said, I did. He goes, what was it? I says, where are the balls? He goes, oh, they never came down. I said, let me give you a little heads up. You might want to tell a girl the next time that you have no balls. So she's not fumbling and going, where are the balls?
And not make her guess afterwards. You already know the answer, you dumbass. What the fuck?
I said to myself, what am I doing? This is like ridiculous. This, he, I don't know what I saw. What, you know, it's just at the time you're attracted to what it is. And I'm like, this one is beyond anything. But the slide in that pussy is a homicide. But the slide in that pussy is the homicide.
Welcome to Hookup Horror Stories, the podcast where we spill the tea on sex and dating. I'm Demi Wilde, your resident sexual deviant. And today I've got a very extra special guest, deviant, certified love and life coach, Ann Bell. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Demi. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for being here. I'm so excited to talk to you. And Ann Bell, not the actress.
No.
Did you know?
Is there an actress?
There is an actress. Yeah, there
really?
Is an actress. Yeah, she probably a bit older than you even. But she was in like the 60s, like
I'm
kind of
gonna
big in
have
the
to
60s.
Google that.
She was married to Robert Lang.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean she's past. She's way past. Yeah.
Well, look, you learn something new every day.
You do, yes. But anyways, Anne, let's get a little bit into it. Tell us a little bit about yourself, shall we?
Well, I'm a love and life coach. I started out as a licensed massage therapist, and I found myself, I've been doing that for 26 years, and I find I attract clients that love to talk on the table. So we would talk about everything and anything, you know, everything was fair game for me. I figured people don't have a safe space to be themselves, and I provided that for people. Which is really, really cool because it's actually an honor for me that they think so highly that they'll spill everything they want to say. You know, I'm kind of like the bartender.
Right.
So, then back in 2020, when the pandemic hit, I had to shutter my massage business and I had been life coaching, but massage was my primary.
Right.
So I decided that needed to, you know, I needed to transition. And I took a class, a certification on love, sex, and relationships. And it was very extensive and it was a lot of fun. And I was like, since I'm talking about sex anyways with people, why not? So I started converting over to coaching.
That's cool.
And yeah, it's really, really, really cool. And, you know, I'm a bit older than you. I'm in my early 60s, and I'm finding out how my generation is still very I don't want to say stagnant or uneducated or still
there's a stigma.
Hesitant. They're still hesitant about diving in and talking about sex.
Completely agree. There's a huge stigma around sex, especially with older generations. I am trying to break that myself. I was raised with such stigma around it as well. And so like, I was really like difficult to have these conversations with parents or stuff. You learn all this stuff from friends, essentially, like in high school or middle school. That's not education though. That's just gossip.
It's sharing experiences.
Yeah.
And they're usually, you're fumbling, you don't know, and it's their experience and it might not apply to you. It's just so interesting how we get educated about it. And I just wish it were such a more open topic, because I think we wouldn't be so stigmatized, shamed, and afraid to explore what we really like. I think there would be less anger in society if people are allowed to be the sexual beings they really want to be.
I agree completely. You and I have something in common, it seems. I went to massage therapy school when I was like in my early 20s. So I was pursuing that was like gonna be my first career, but I ended up not finishing the school. It was also turned out to be a little bit of a scam school, so it wasn't
really. Where'd you go to school?
It was in Riverside, California. It was a little like kind of mom and pop school, quote unquote. But yeah, I don't think they were accredited, so I'm kind of glad I got out of it.
Yes, that's the problem with massage. You know, the industry in a whole, like I think California has no state licensure. Every county has their own requirements, so it makes it rather difficult.
Yeah, but I completely got that when we did practicing on people. It's just, you kind of become people's therapists in some way. Like I think the same thing goes for like hairdressers. Same kind of thing goes for like, you know, bartenders, like you said. Like you there's just something about these types of like hands-on type jobs that makes people very comfortable with you.
Well, let's face it, if people for massage, if they're getting naked or, you know, very close to naked, there's a huge level of trust in that alone. So they're like laying on the table, they're just basically, you know, if I'm gonna do this, then I'm gonna spill it all, you know. So
exactly,
it's a level of comfort people have with you, which is, you know, really, really cool. But yes, they do want to tell you things that they can't tell other people, especially their loved ones, their family, their friends. It's amazing to me.
Yeah. There's something very vulnerable about that.
Yes. So, you know, it's really cool.
Yeah.
To tell you the truth.
Yeah, for sure. Where are you from? I detect an accent.
Do you? I'm a New Yorker.
Oh, that would be it. Yes.
I'm upstate New York, though. I'm in Orange County. I'm 60 miles north of New York City. And I've done a lot of traveling, and people automatically just think they only know New York as New York. They don't realize there's a whole upstate. And I get tagged with the way it's my coffee and water.
They're like, and water.
Coffee and water. Oh, you're from New York. I'm like, yeah, my coffee and my water give me away.
I was just in New York maybe like 3 weeks ago. New York
Did
City.
Like
but
it?
Yeah, I do have like a fantasy of like buying one of those old properties in upstate New York at some point in my life and just, you know, like renovating and like turning into like a really beautiful piece of housing. What part of upstate are you in?
I'm in the Hudson Valley. I'm actually in the Goshen area. And the Hudson Valley is fabulous. I think Airbnb 2 or 3 years ago, the Hudson Valley was in the number 10 areas to visit an Airbnb out of the whole world.
Wow.
Yes. It's very, very pretty. All seasons are pretty here. It's just, we have mountains. We just have so much here. And I think that's what makes it so diverse. for people to come. They can come at any season and be in love with the Hudson Valley.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, it really, really is.
So you grew up out there.
Yes.
Tell me about little Anne. How did little Anne grow up?
It's funny because I grew up with very conservative parents. You know, when we were talking about sex earlier, even when parents don't, that's always the one question I ask people is culturally, you know, what was it like in your house? What was it like about sex in your house, your parents, you know, was it discussed? Because even if you're not discussing sex, there's still that shame element attached to it when you're not, like, it's something taboo. So my mother is now, she's 88. My dad has passed on, but there was no talk of sex. You know, it was, you know, they had five girls. I have four sisters. And our requirements were to get a high school diploma and go find a husband. Those were the things that was it. That was what my parents wanted us to find spouses to take care of us. And we all did. A couple times did it. To get it right.
Right. Somehow.
Yeah. I'm actually a widow myself. I was widowed at 29. Then I realized that this isn't really for me, this marriage thing. I wanted more for myself. I was very stagnant. I was like, there has to be more than this. We were, I grew up in the middle of apple orchards all around us.
Gorgeous.
We grew up in the country, so we were very self-reliant. You know, my father had his own business, and my mother was he was an excavator. And I can remember many times he would break down, you know, we have to run for parts, you have to help your father. You know, I was their bookkeeper. I started at 14 in the business myself. Bookkeeping's my love. I love bookkeeping. It was one of my first occupations. So it was very small. My world was very, very small. They kept it, around us. My mother had a lot of siblings, you know, so the aunts and uncles would come. It was very family oriented, but there was absolutely no talk of sex. Right. You know, there was no education, you know, nothing. And I always tell this story about, I don't know if you care, when,
I care a lot.
I mean, if you
anything you have to say, I care.
If you don't mind me talking about it, I seem to talk about this a lot because it intrigues people, especially of my age. You know, when I got my period, you know, I was like, what is this? And my mother would hand me, you know, my first Kotex, and she says, now you're a lady. And I'm like, okay, what is that? What is this? What does all this mean? I remember
pretty typical interaction, I would say, for most young girls.
Yes. And I even have this when they introduced it in school. I tell this story all the time because I think it's funny. One of my sisters who keep telling, she says, you tell this story a lot. It's just because it helps people to understand how education is so direly needed in this subject. When they were going to introduce your period to you in school, you had to get your parents to sign the permission slip. Mm-hmm. And the boy next to me, his name was Rudy, he goes, oh, what is that? I says, oh, I think they're going to teach us about cars. You know, I mean, I would just
what?
I know. This is how naive I was. Like, I had no clue. And when I remember getting in there, I'm like, what is this? You know, there was no preparation. You know, my mother didn't talk about it. My father certainly wasn't talking about it. You know, at one point, I remember when we must have all been getting older and we had one bathroom and my father was so tired of it. He said to my mother one day, see that wall over there? Get everything off that wall. I'm knocking it out today and I'm going to put an addition on this house. And he did. Go. Yes. And then we had our own bathroom. He's like, you all get up there and have your own bathroom. Get out of mine.
Exactly.
So, you know, it's just, you know, it was a hard household to be into because there was addiction, there was domestic violence. But it also, I got a great work ethic. I, you know, my parents taught me, you know, anything happens to you, you get back up and you continue on. So there was, you know, there's pros and cons to any upbringing, I think.
Right. I agree completely. And I actually had a similar background as well. You know, there's a lot of like addiction and transience and all kinds of weird stuff happening in my place. But you know, you live and you learn resilience through the process.
Right. You really do. So, you know, I remember after a week or two after my husband died, you know, I said to my mother, I'm boohooing. Oh, what am I going to do? You know, and she just said to me, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You know, she says, I'll tell you what you're going to do. You're going to go back to work, you know, and one day this won't hurt so bad, but you're going to get back to your life. And I'm like, oh, okay. Okay. I mean, I didn't know.
Thanks, Mom, for the pick me up.
Really? But I didn't know I could stay home and fall apart. My mother told me to go back to work. Well, what else would I do? Because that's all I knew at that time. That's the only choice I had, was to go back to work, because, you know, that's what my mother said. So, which was excellent advice. But I still had other choices I had no clue about. So it's just, you know, it's growing, it's learning, it's, you know, filtering out, processing, healing, you know, things come back around, you think mm-hmm. they heal, and they come up again. You know, my therapist always said, cleaning the cupboards, we're cleaning the cupboards, you know, when an issue would come back around. So I don't believe we get anywhere in this life alone. You know, I've been to therapy, I've been coached, I've been mentored. You know, I really, really believe that we need community, we need each other to advance and grow and heal.
It really does take a village, especially like I have triplet half brothers and sisters. And when they were born, my father was like kind of not great. And their mother was also not great. So they basically were left in the care of my grandparents and my aunt, my uncle, and my other aunts. And so like it basically took like all six of everybody like to like mm-hmm. raise these kids. And, you know, and then of course, you know, their teachers and everyone else that was involved in their lives and stuff. So they turned out great. They turned out probably some of the best kids I've ever seen. Gen Z, they're going to save us all.
Yeah.
I think. I'm pretty sure they are.
Somebody needs to.
I really believe it's
interesting because my father was busy working and doing what he was doing when we were little. My mother came from a family of 17 children. So she was caregiving. She was like number 9 in there. So she was caregiving, you know, all the time. So when she started to have us, her younger sisters would come and help her and, you know, help with us and with a new baby. And then when my sisters started having babies, you know, there were enough of us as siblings, we would help them, you know, whether it was child rearing, cooking, cleaning, whatever they needed. So it really does take a village. You just don't, you know, I feel bad for parents today that only have each other and they don't have extended family to help them.
Right.
Because you really, really need, you know, that community, you know, even if your family can't come or you can't connect with them, you know, build a community to help you.
Right.
So it's really, really important for people to have that.
I agree. You mentioned you, I'm not sure if you want to go here, you're welcome to, but I am very curious. I haven't had anyone who has lost a partner in the past. Mm. I'm very curious what that process was for you and how did that happen?
It was a very difficult process. We were both very young. We were both 29.
Yeah.
And I remember the day it happened, my father was an excavator and my brother-in-law, who I was working for at the time, was building a new building to consolidate the business. I was working in his basement of his home. He was a portable toilet company. The toilets were stored in an apple orchard. The trucks were at my parents'. So he had grown so much, it was inefficient for business. We all needed to be central. And they were basically putting in a water line and the ditch collapsed. and my husband was in the ditch. So he was basically, you know, he was buried alive.
Oh my God.
So yeah. So I was there. I saw the whole thing. It was one of the hardest moments of my life, I have to tell you. Oh. And the weird thing was, though, prior to that morning, that I had a very strange feeling all day long. And my husband, he took a lot of my attention. We had no children. You know, we'd been together 7 years, and he was, you know, I was the center of his world, basically. Mm-hmm. So he needed a lot of attention. And he even said to me that day, he says, "You're not paying any attention. Where are you?" I said to him, "I don't know it. I have this strange feeling, like I couldn't stay in my body. I just couldn't stay. I was like weird. I was very weirded out all day." And I look back at it and I'm like, this is what I was intuiting. Something was going down.
Absolutely.
I just had no idea what it was. And I can remember standing on the road. I mean, this was a little tiny village, so it was very big, big to do. There was like a gazillion people there. And I remember standing on this hill, like, in the back of my head, I'm saying to myself, what am I going to do? I just was so befuddled. I just couldn't stay present. It was so big. I couldn't take any of it in. I was in shock. So I'm freaking out. And I heard behind me, you know, I heard a voice behind me. There was nobody behind me, but I heard, "You're going to take this tragedy and you're going to turn it around and make it something positive." And I said to myself,
"You audibly heard a voice behind you?"
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, I got chills just now.
And I look behind me. I'm like, "There's no fucking buddy behind me. What's going on?" And right before the voice, the my world slowed down. You know how in the movies everything's spinning around, and mm-hmm. that person, everything just slows down in that moment for the person while the world is still going around? Mm-hmm. That's what happened. And I heard the voice and I was like, "Ooh." And then everything sped back up. Then I came back to the world, you know, back to what was happening. And I always remember that. Okay. I don't know I'm just dealing now day by day here. So it was really, really hard, because it was my first really big death, and yeah. I really didn't have a belief system in place per se. So that's when I really started to get involved with, you know, what is reincarnation? And I started visiting, I visited a psychic. My in-laws had gone.
As one does.
Yes, as one does. And my in-laws had gone and they said to me, "Ann, you really should go. She's going to give you some relief. You know, I'm like, okay, I'm going to go." And I was afraid. I didn't believe and I didn't know. You know, I'm like, this is freaky. And I went, and believe it or not, this was my aunt's cousin, who we had never met. We later put the connection together. But she told me things she possibly couldn't have known because nobody knew them but me. And I said to myself, how does she know all of this? Because she can't know this, because only this was between me and my husband, some of this stuff. So it kind of made me, I walked away with comfort. Mm-hmm. I walked away feeling better. I had some comfort. I'm like, okay, so what is all of this about? Then I kind of dove into the spiritual world, you know, reincarnation, meditation,
near-death experiences.
Yes, all of it. I just really kind of, and I found the world very, very fascinating, to tell you the honest truth, because I was looking for peace. I was looking for a belief system. I was looking to make sense of this. You know, because it just blew my, you know, everything right out of the water for me. So that's, and what is it going to be, 33 years now? And I always say that my husband gave me a great gift. He gave me the gift of me, because that life I was living was not meant for me. It was just not, it wasn't meant for me, that life.
Yeah.
And I was able to go out and really just step into other things and find pieces of myself and explore. I was able to, in my 50s, at age 53, up and sold everything. I read the book Eat, Pray, Love. And I said, oh, I'm going to be doing this.
This is and me now. Take it off.
You know how, do you know how you get that feeling? Like that spark? Like, oh, yes. I'm going to be doing this.
Yes.
And that's exact. And you got to follow that because that's your soul screaming like, go, do this. And I've learned to listen to that. And I traveled for almost 2 years extensively. Just did whatever I want. It was so fun. It was so growing. And I only had the first week plan. After that, I did it by meditating, dreaming, and meeting people along the way. My next path. Where am I going next?
Flying by the seat of your pants.
I did. Yes. And it was really, really fun. I mean, it was scary. It was frightening. It was fun. I've met people all over the world where I traveled. I still talk to them. You know, I've been to countries I would never go to. I don't know. It was just so much fun to have the freedom to do that.
That's actually very beautiful. I'm glad something good came from that experience.
Yeah. Yeah. A lot of good has come from that. A lot of good. But my family has known, you know, and after my husband died 5 years later, you know, my younger sister lost a child and her husband died of a heart attack. And then 4 years later, my father died. So it was in my 30s, it was a 9 year, you know, my younger sister and I, we've lost a decade of our lives to grieving. It was so much loss. But it was also very growing. It was a grieving decade and a growing decade. I don't know how else to explain it. Like that's when I became a massage therapist. That's when I realized, you know, I wanted to change my life and do something different. And it was just because I was very non-traditional compared to my family. I was doing things that they would never want to do, and I had this desire and I did them.
Exactly. Yeah, for sure. Me and my mother both were like, we kind of share the same personality traits in some ways. Like she was the black sheep of her family. I am also in that same path, although I am an only child, so I don't really have sisters or brothers to like actually compare to, luckily. But yeah, like I'm definitely like, I'm just off the beaten path. Like I choose not to follow any sort of tradition. Whereas most of my family is like very traditional and like, they just want to be like, you know.
And that works for them.
And there's nothing.
Yeah. To me, there's nothing wrong with it. I just couldn't fit myself there. It never made any sense to me. I remember one time I had this, you know, I had a lover and I, my home was next to my parents' home at the time. And he would come at night and he would go, you know, come and go, come and go. And one day one of my sisters said, oh, mom and dad would like to meet him. And I looked at her and I said, it's not that type of relationship.
We're not there. It's not that type of relationship.
And they never asked again. I still remember that. I'm like, it's not the type of relationship. You don't bring them home.
Before we take a break here, I want to ask you one question. What is the most messed up reason you've ever been dumped or been dumped?
I think, well, ghosting. I think when they just ghost, there's no reason.
That is really bad. I'm guilty of it, but it also hurts to have it done to you.
Yes. Especially when you're jiving and clicking and things are going well and they just up and disappeared and you're like, what? But we don't realize that they've done you a favor.
Yeah.
They've done you a favor. It took me a few times to understand that though. I didn't get that right away because I was so vested in it. And also because, you know, some of my issues, you know, when you grow up with in an addiction family, especially a father who's an alcoholic, and you as the daughter have, you know, you can have addictions of your own, and you have a high chance of being addicted to men, mm-hmm. which is you're looking for the same, you form attachments, not connection, not loving connections. They're more attachments, where that's where you're vested way too soon. You're not looking at it with a clear head. All the red flags are not, you can fix them, you can change them. You know, in your mind, you think they're waiting for you to do all this for them.
Right.
So I had to learn that that's not healthy.
Yeah.
That's not healthy at all.
When I was 19, I had a long, well, I think I was a little bit younger than that. I might've been 17 actually. don't tell anybody. But I had a long distance boyfriend who we met online and we talked every single night. It wasn't even that long distance. It was like, I was in Riverside, he was in Long Beach. But he was a little bit older. He was like 25, 26. And I remember this, we would talk every single day on the phone. And he all of a sudden just stopped calling. And he wouldn't pick up my calls. He stopped answering. Mm. And for 2 months, I did not hear anything from him. Just not even a goodbye, not like anything. It was probably the most traumatic thing that's ever happened to me, because it's like fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. And I finally got a call from him. And he said that he just was dealing with some mental stuff. And he went to Mexico for 2 months, which I'm like, good for you. But
yeah,
you should have told me, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you got to let people know these things, you know, even if it hurts, even if you feel like you can't like do it, you owe it to the person to like just say, hey.
Yes.
Here's what's up.
There's people that can't do it. They can't do it. They don't know how. They don't want to. Whatever their reason is, honestly, he's just not that into you. And it's so true. He's just not that interested. They're not that interested in moving it forward.
Right.
If it's, and that's, they're giving you the time and attention for what's good for them until it's not good anymore. And then they go off and then they come back. And if it's allowed, they'll stay if it's allowed.
Yeah.
And they'll go when they're going to go again.
Ghosting sucks.
Yes.
Sucks.
I actually had one guy I met one time and he said to me, this was internet dating very early. And I had pictures and everything. And we get to the restaurant, we meet, and he's like, I said, what's wrong? There was just energy was off. I says, oh, what's wrong? He goes, well, you're not what I'm disappointed. I says, you're disappointed? He goes, yeah, you're not what I expected.
What I said, okay.
He says, well, let's go have a drink. And I'm like, wait, hold on a second. I turned around and I said, is he fucking kidding me? And I turned back around. I said to him, you know what? I'm not going to have a drink with someone that's disappointed. So you go have your drink. And I turned and walked away. And my car was valeted, and the valet heard the whole thing. She was a female. I said to her, she says, are you okay? I says, yeah, I'm okay. But could you get my car in a hurry? She goes, absolutely. I'll get your car in a hurry. But I don't think he was used to anybody walking away from him, because, you know, he thought he was all that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's just, these are such harsh moments, but they're so growing too.
Yeah, absolutely. We're going to take a quick break. And then when we come back, I know you've got at least one, perhaps two stories for us.
That I do.
We'll be right back.
All right.
And I know you got a story for us. Let's hear it.
I had a couple, and I'm trying to decide which one. So I'm going to tell this one, I think, because it's funny. So after the death of my husband, you know, you had to get back out there and start dating.
Right.
And I don't even know where I got this guy from, to tell you the honest truth, where I met him or whatever. He was nice guy. So he comes and he picks me up at my condo and we get in the car. And this should have been my first clue, but, you know, I'm ever hopeful. You know, I'm in my late 30s at this point. So I'm forever hopeful. I get in his car and it looks like a hoarder had lived there, but he had cleaned my
Red flag. Red flag for me. No, thank you.
He had cleaned my seat off and I'm like, okay, I'm getting in the car. Like, let's not touch anything.
That's a cry for help.
So we're driving and I see this coffee cup. Now he has an open coffee cup in the holder. And I said to him, oh, you're not afraid of that spilling? And he goes, oh, no. I says, really? He goes, no, that's this was my mother's car and she died. And that's her coffee cup with coffee in it. I said, what? He says, yeah, that's her coffee cup with the last drink of coffee she had. I said, really? So I'm like, okay. And I'm like, la-di-da.
No.
So we go to dinner. Come, you know, it's going okay. We go back. You know, it was a little weird. And I'm like, all right. So we go back to my place and we're sitting, you know, and now I don't know, we're watching TV. We start making out, whatever. We end up in the bedroom. And so now we're going at it. So, you know, we're both naked and I'm starting to, you know, I go for his penis and I'm, you know, on the penis and, you know, you're going for the balls. And I'm like, where are the balls? Now in my head, I'm like, where are the balls? I know it's been a little bit, but did they move the balls and I didn't get the memo? Where are the balls? So I go back to the penis because I know that. I'm like, okay, so we do whatever. And he... He ends up spending the night. The next morning, we're lying in bed talking. And he says, oh, did you notice something different about me? I said, I did. He goes, what was it? I says, where are the balls? He goes, oh, they never came down. I said, let me give you a little heads up. You might want to tell a girl the next time that you have no balls. So she's not fumbling and going, where are the balls?
And not make her guess afterwards. You already know the answer, you dumbass. What the fuck?
I said to myself, what am I doing? This is like ridiculous. I don't know what I saw. What, you know, it's just at the time you're attracted to what it is. And I'm like, this one is beyond anything.
Like, but also, if your balls don't drop, I learned this a long time ago. I don't remember where, but if your balls don't drop, you're actually at a higher risk for testicular cancer. So, like, mm-hmm. You need to get that checked. Hopefully he had.
I don't know what it was. He mentions it was so long ago. All I remember is the highlights of that story. But in my head, I'm like, I didn't get the memo. Did they move the balls? Where are the balls?
Did God have a just different blueprint with this one?
I'm like, oh my
God. Am I being punked right now?
Balls. He's fumbling. I'm like, oh my God, where are the... Oh, let me just get off of them because now I know there's a dick. Let me just get on that because I know it's there. But I said, don't set a girl up for failure. Don't set yourself up for failure. I said, tell, stay.
Right. Don't keep secrets and make me guess.
Think that I don't know what I'm doing.
What's missing? Did you notice?
See, I'm like, this is creepy and I'm not seeing you again. It didn't last long.
Oh,
but
no.
Yeah, it was just one of those stories. But here, I have another one for you because I didn't learn not to invite men to my house. So there was a guy who had a street sweeping business in the next county over from me. And again, internet dating. And he had posted pictures from 20 years ago. Now, I'm not putting
No.
it together.
No.
I'm not, you know, I'm like, oh, he's hot. So he says, you know, I'll come to your condo. Okay, come to my condo. Last time ever that I've learned my lesson. He comes to the door. I answer it and I'm like, who is this? Who is, I said, who are you? He goes, whatever his name was. I'm like, but you don't look like you. He's got a vinyl track suit on, and he reminded me of, I think he had a something wrong with his arm. I don't know if he had a stroke or something. He was much older, much heavier, and he had grayish, you know, with hair. I mean, looked nothing like himself. I was like, who are you? And he reminded me of the line, was it Lionel, the pig, the character that had the dirt all around him?
Yeah.
Who was that? Was a
His
pig pen,
blanket. Yeah.
whatever. It was a pig pen, the one character
Pig
that
pen. Yeah, pig
pig pen
pen.
that held, and that's what he looked like. He looked disheveled. He looked like he needed a shower. I mean, he just looked like he needed some
Oh.
grooming. And he comes in the house, and I'm like, oh my God, this is terrible. I shouldn't have let him in the house at that point. But I get him a beverage and I had snacks, and I'm like, well, he ain't getting no snacks. There's no way I'm snacking this man because he's never going to leave.
Yeah.
And he's so
Smart.
attracted. He's so attracted to me. And he says to me, come over here and kiss me. And I said, I'm not kissing you. Like that. Like, take my hand. Like, I'm
Look
kissing
at
you.
you.
I couldn't help it. I was like, oh no. I said, would you excuse me? And I went to the bathroom. I said, oh, I got to get rid of him. So I came back out and I was sick. I said, oh, I'm not feeling well. You have to go. And so I, you know, I got rid of him because you just never know in the situation. You know, you're alone. I mean, it was really dumb of me to invite him to my home. I should have, I never do that. I meet them out now.
Right.
But you know, he was really liking me. I said to him, look, I have a problem. I told him late the next day. I says, I have a problem that one, you're lying about who you are. I don't care. You know, we're all in my, we're all older. We, you know, we don't have perfect bodies, but you're representing yourself as something you're not. What else are you hiding?
Exactly.
You know, what else are you hiding if you're not telling me who you really are? If you're not showing me who you really are, at this age, you know, we need to get over it.
I have a catfish story, and I'm not sure if I don't think I've told this story on the podcast before, but
Tell me, I want to hear it.
this was pretty bad. So I was on the apps. I was maybe in Sacramento at the time. Yeah, I was in Sacramento at the time. And I was on the apps and I was looking at, someone to just like have some fun with. And I start chatting with this guy, very attractive, like very attractive. He sent me several pictures. Pictures were all right here. First, chest up. I love a good chest. He had a very good chest. And I was like, yes. He goes, come over, let's hang out. I get an Uber. I go over to his place. He answers the door, thinking that he's gonna be at eye level with me. He is not. He is down here, but he's also in a wheelchair. I go, oh, still very cute, but I'm like, you didn't tell me that. And I was like, okay. So I didn't know what to do at this point. Like, I'm
Right.
here. So I go in and he goes, can I get you anything to drink? Like, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I'm okay. Still not mentioning that, hey, yeah, this is me, and then, he's like, can I kiss you? I was like, sure, can I kiss you? And he starts kissing me, and I like go to like feel his like side, and I felt something like in his side, and I go, what's that? And it was, oh, that's my colostomy bag. was like, okay, I'm sorry. I have to go. Like, this is not.
But see, it's a shame because they set themselves up for failure.
Right. It's like, let me know what I'm in for. Yes. And let me make that decision.
Yes. 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 You know, it doesn't matter. You have a colostomy bag, but you have to prepare, you know, people for it because it's shocking. Right. When you're thinking one thing and, you know, I get it that they're probably not having a lot of luck, but you have to be honest about it too, because it's not fair. You have
to be honest. Yeah.
Right. Right.
And he was very cute. I would have probably, you know, like, hey, let's make out or something. Or let's do something, but just prepare me for it beforehand.
Yes. Let you wrap your brain around it. You know, like, that's the whole thing when people do that.
Informed consent is what they call it.
Yes. I mean, I have a friend with a colostomy bag. It's no big fucking deal, but I know it. You know, you're not in the romance department. You can't do it in the romance department.
No surprise.
But that's the thing, right? If you're surprising people, you know, I find that women lie about their age and men lie about their height. Now I'm finding men are lying about their age. You know, in my age bracket, they'll drop their age down too, because, you know, nobody wants to date, you know, people don't want older men. But you can pretty much tell, I'm like, you're not 57, you know, it's just not, I don't, you know. It's just, you know, dating is, you're going to learn about yourself a lot in dating. Yeah. I remember one time I was seeing this guy and, I went to his penthouse where his business was. And I'm like, okay, we're going to the penthouse. And, you know, we're doing whatever.
Ooh, yeah.
And all of a sudden he goes, the bell rings. Now, nobody was supposed to be there. And I'm like, oh, who's ringing the bell? You know, he goes, oh, my God, I forgot the plant lady's coming. Run, you have to hide. I'm like, what do I have? Hide. He goes, get in the bathroom. I'm like, why do I have to get in the bathroom? He goes, oh, I forgot to tell you I'm married. I'm like, oh my God. So I'm in the
Oh, for the love of God.
I'm in the bathroom hiding. Grab my clothes in the bathroom hiding. And the lights are all out. And I hear them talking. You know, he's like, be quiet. So I call my girlfriend on the phone. She goes, what's going on? I says, I'm in the bathroom because the plant lady's here and I can't be seen. The plant lady.
Good like, Lord. Dude. Men, we need to do better. We need to do better. Just all around.
And then he gave me $50, you know, on the way out. I'm like, oh.
Well, at least you got some money.
I'm like, he says, here, this is for gas. I'm like, oh, thanks.
I think I was just... Now I'm a hooker. Now I'm a hooker.
Oh, it's just so funny. I'm like, okay.
Okay, this has been a riot. I absolutely love this. Before I let you go, Anne... I'm going to play it. We're going to play a quick game.
Oh, okay.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. This is Red Flags. Do you know how to play Red Flags?
No.
Okay. Red Flags is basically, I'm going to give you a situation about a partner. Could be a romantic partner, could be whatever. All you have to do is tell me if it's a red flag for you or not.
Okay.
Yeah. Pretty simple. Number one, they are a professional wrestler.
That's okay.
It's a green flag.
So far, yeah.
Okay, they get a little bit more complicated as we go along. Okay. They have the sex with them is the best sex you've ever had, but they are a compulsive liar.
Red flag.
Even if all the orgasms in the world. I agree.
Red flag.
Kind of a red flag for me too. I actually dated a pathological liar temporarily. It was quite the ordeal.
Yes, it is quite. I've done it. It's quite the ordeal.
He told me his father was in the Yakuza.
I've dated CIA agents. I've dated mercenaries.
Okay. Assassins.
So they told me. I'm like, okay.
Assassins.
One guy's busy telling that, you know, we're busy having sex. And he says, you know, I could kill you right now. I said to him, could you wait until we're finished at least? I'd like to have my orgasm. I'm like, what am I supposed to say to that?
Oh my God. All right. Number three, they write erotic lassie fan fiction.
Fan fiction?
Yeah.
I'm unsure.
About Lassie. The dog.
No, I don't. No. No dogs. No.
That one tickled me a lot. Lassie. They take you shopping, but they live tweet your purchases.
No.
They take me shopping. I would maybe be okay with this.
Yeah.
Because then people wouldn't know how bougie I can be.
I'm not a fan of telling everybody every move I make, honestly. So it's a creeper.
But if they're doing it, I think I'm okay with it. Like, you know, you're paying for whatever and then you just live tweet it. Fine. Buy me a Tesla. Live tweet that. Last one. They only have eyes for you. They literally can only think about you.
They're not focusing on their life or anything else.
Nope.
No, that's a little too much for me.
It's a little too much for me too.
It's a little too much.
I need to be able to like have a conversation about like, oh, hey, that person's attractive. You know, I think I need to like be able to have at least that.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's obsession, I'm, you know, that's borderline. You know, they have to have a life. They have to be able to do other things too.
Right. Well, that's all I got for you. And this has been fantastic. I thank you for being here. This is so much fun.
Thank you for having me. You're enjoyable. You're a hoot. I loved it.
Thank you. And where can my listeners find you?
You can find me on my website, aconfidentialconversation.com. I'm also on Instagram and Facebook. And if you'd like to have a further conversation with me, I do have a getting to know you call for a nominal fee that you can book on my website.
And you'll find all the links in that in the show notes and in the description on YouTube. And thank you for being here today.
Thank you, Demi. I loved it.
Thank you. A very special thank you to my guests for joining me in this week's episode. Check out the episode description for all of their information. If you enjoyed this episode, please take a moment to leave a comment and a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. It'll really help out the show. Also, subscribe to my YouTube channel for video versions of this show and other content. You will find my blogs, The Deviant Diaries, and A Deviant's Guide to Sex, show notes, articles used, and Hookup Horror Stories official merch on my website at DimitriWild.com. You can also purchase both of my poetry books, Bitter Blue Pill, and All Was Nothing in the Time of Champions from Amazon.com. Just search for Dimitri Wild. Oh, one last thing. Thank you for listening. And
remember, subscribing might not be worth it, but it's also not optional. So just do it.